versus Newsom. Mr. Whitmer, Mr. Taylor, good afternoon. Good morning, gentlemen. Do you want to reserve any rebuttal, Mr. Whitmer?
3 minutes, Your Honor.
Three? You said three?
Three.
All right, you may proceed.
Good morning, Judge Frank, and may it please the court. I'm here, as the court has noted, as the appellant in this matter, putting the standard of review on the other foot, as it were, which makes me, in some respects, grateful that the standard of review for this particular case is de novo.
First time you've ever asked for that, is it?
The standard of review for this matter is de novo. This is a pure question of law presented to the court. What the trial judge did in this case was determined essentially that the mandatory sentencing provision of 18.2-308.2, which prohibits a sentence being ordered to be served concurrently, could be avoided if the court announced the sentence for 18.2-308.2 first and then ordered the next sentence announced to be run concurrently with that.
Would you agree that under 308.4, the only limitation is primary felony?
That yes.
That can't run together with the primary felony.
I would agree with that.
All right. And 308.2 is not the primary felony, is it?
It is not.
All right, so you don't have a problem with the 308.4 time running concurrently with 308.2. It's the reverse that's troubling you.
No. Okay. It is impermissible either way, because if it doesn't matter which way you announce it, the effect is to run the sentence under 18.2-308.2 concurrently with another sentence. You don't manage to effectuate that by announcing one sentence first and the other sentence later.
I understand, but I wasn't clear enough. You don't have a problem with 308.4, but what your problem is running that time concurrently with 308.2 violates the term of 308.2.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
That is exactly the issue that the Commonwealth has a problem with in this case, Judge Frank. And as I think we put before the court on the brief, if trial judges can evade the unambiguous sentencing provision of 18.2-308.2 simply by virtue of announcing the other sentence second and running it concurrently with that, then all of the concurrent sentencing provisions in the code can be evaded by the trial judges and are meaningless.
Is the effect of what you're saying, maybe not exactly it, but the effect is that no language in the sentencing order of point four can be made to have an effect on the sentence of point two if it violates point two by making it a concurrent sentence?
That is, Your Honor. And in fact, the way the code section is written, specifically under 18.2-308.2, it specifies, it doesn't talk about the court's order. It says that no sentence imposed may be, this sentence may not be served concurrently with the sentence imposed for any other offense. And that refers to the defendant actually serving his time in prison. And so anything that's done by whatever mechanism that defeats that is a sentence that doesn't comply with the law.
This is just a matter of statutory construction.
It is a matter of statutory construction, Your Honor.
And it's a matter of determining, did the General Assembly intend this sentence to run concurrent with any other sentence?
That's correct. That is the question before this court, Judge Petty.
They not only in this statute, but in the entire statutory scheme of mandatory sentences, there looks to have been a pretty clear intent by the General Assembly that the answer to that question is no, that they run consecutively.
That has been the understanding of the courts and the bar for a long time, and in some respects it was cast in doubt by the Brown decision with respect to the language that was used in 18.253.1, which is mirrored in 18.2308.4.
We recently, and the name of the case escapes me, but we recently dealt with the concurrent sentence issue involving possession of child pornography. Familiar with that case?
I think that's eluding me today, Your Honor.
Well, I think if I recall the response from the General Assembly, we said that that could run concurrent with each other. And the response to the General Assembly was to change the law and say, no, it can't.
Now that you've refreshed my recollection about that, I do recall some legislation in the General Assembly within the last two terms of the General Assembly modifying a child pornography provision of the code.
Mr. Whitmer, it seems to me the purpose of 308.2 is that the language indicates that you can't dilute the sentence under point 2 by running it concurrently with any other sentence.
I would agree with that statement, Judge Frank.
Okay. Then explain to me how that running some point 4 concurrently with point 2 dilutes the sentence under point 2. It certainly dilutes the sentence under point 4, which is authorized by statute. But how does it dilute? He got the time, and he's pulling that time. How is it diluted by having point 4, part of point 4, run concurrently with point 2?
Well, Your Honor, the point, my recollection is that the mandatory portion of the sentence imposed under point 4 is what has been run concurrently with the sentence in point 2. So effectively what the trial judge has done is worked magic that is contrary to the intention of both of those.
My question is, how does point 4 concurrent with point 2, how does that dilute the sentence under point 2 because the defendant is pulling every bit of that time?
I would say that what it does, I see your point, Your Honor, and what it does is it impermissibly dilutes the sentence under point 4 because that sentence is not being run concurrently with
right.
a sentence
but
to, that it can run concurrent with.
You can dilute point 4 as long as it's not the primary offense.
Well,
but your argument, I thought, was that running that time with point 4 with point 2 violates the language of point 2 because you can't run it concurrently with any other sentence. But it's not being run concurrently with any other sentence.
Except that it is. It is being run concurrently with another sentence. If there had been three offenses in this case, if there had been these two offenses and a robbery, the sentence under robbery is not a good example. If there had been another sentence imposed for an unrelated offense, the defendant had stolen a car as well, the 308.4 could be run concurrently with that.
Well, we keep using the word concurrent, but that's not the word the statute uses. 308.2 says it shall be served consecutively with any other sentence. Am I misreading that?
It shall be served consecutively with any other sentence.
Do I have the wrong?
No, you don't. It's written consecutively. It's written.
So, and when we talk about concurrent, I mean it's Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Concurrent means running together at the same time. this sentence is running concurrent with this one, the other sentence is running concurrent with that one. So we're talking consecutively. It says shall be served consecutively with any other sentence. It's not being served consecutively with another sentence.
What's the remedy that you would want in the mandate?
The case should be the sentence that has been imposed under 308.2 in the order is the correct sentence. I would suggest that the correct result is for the trial judge to be required to resentence under 308.4
and basically delete the sentence. Why isn't this a case where what you do is you tell the Department of Corrections, as the Attorney General and the Attorney for the state, don't you let that guy out? And then you then defend a habeas corpus that he's being held for a year too long because of that serve language. Rather than us adjusting an order because it has the effect of doing that ahead of time.
Well, as an attorney who occasionally deals with Department of Corrections in the context of habeas corpus, I would suggest that even though there are times that our office might give client advice to the Department of Corrections to do things, we usually try to make that client advice consistent with obedience to orders issued by courts of competent jurisdiction. And for that reason, it makes sense for this court to deal with this question today. I think, this is, if it were raised in habeas, if the Department of Corrections refused to honor the order and a habeas corpus provision were brought, I don't know that it could be successful. This was not an agreed-upon sentence. It's not something that was promised to the defendant. I don't think the case can be made that the guilty plea was involuntary. He had already pled guilty, and he simply asked the court for this benefit in connection with the sentencing. So there's no involuntariness in connection with the guilty plea.
Mr. Whitner, you're into your rebuttal. You can continue or reserve the remaining 2.5 minutes.
I thank you, Judge Frank. With the court's permission, I'll take my seat and ask this court to reverse the judgment of the circuit court and remand for resentencing.
Mr. Taylor.
Good morning, judges. My name is Matt Taylor. I'm from the Public Defender's Office here, and I'm a victim of circumstance. As you can see, this is Judge Brown's battle. This is his brilliant legal argument. As a matter of fact, off the record, talking to my client, says, ask if this can be run concurrent. I was telling him, it can't be, man. It can't be. And so he spoke up on record and asked the judge, can you run this concurrent, while I'm getting perturbed at his motion. And Judge Brown basically says, well, let's look at that. So what Judge Brown is, Judge Brown is obviously not trying to evade the unambiguous here. He's trying to get the legislature to look at the contradiction and to straighten it out. And he's addressing that. He wants this to go to you.
Is the sentence for 308.2 running consecutively with the sentence for 308.4?
Yes, it is. It's running consecutive. But
consecutive means one after another.
Well, nothing's running consecutive. Well, it is running consecutive with everything, and that's the law. It's supposed to run. It's got to run consecutive with anything and everything. But the contradiction here is 308.4 that says only with the primary offense. So the logic is, if it runs into an absurdity, it's not Judge Brown's fault, it's the legislature's fault, because there is an absurdity going on here.
Why do you say there's an absurdity? I
mean, well,
you treat one statute different than another. That happens all the time.
I'm just saying if. I don't think there is. I think that this has to be answered one way or the other, either by your honors or maybe to the Supreme Court. But someone's got to close this gap, because you will always be able to construe 308.4 as it is. So that's what Judge Brown is asking. Which trumps? If it looks like, if 308.2 looks like it's being run concurrent with anything, it's because it really is through the back door. But the law allows 308.4 to run concurrent with this 308.2. That's the logical absurdity of the whole thing, possibly. It's allowing it because the legislature didn't straighten out the language in the code.
Isn't that a distinction without a difference?
Is it a what?
Distinction without a difference. Which is running concurrent with which? Because concurrent means together.
Yes. It is exactly that. And it allows you to make that statement.
And if we go down that path, aren't we reaching kind of an absurd result?
Yes.
Which is something that rules of statutory construction tell us to try to avoid.
Yes. That's the judge's point. Let's straighten out this code, because this question was inevitable. Which one trumps? That's the question to your honors. That's the question that this court, I think, is going to figure out. But there is a living contradiction.
One way or the other, we will figure it out.
Yes, sir. I know you will, and that's Judge Brown's intention, I am sure. He is the legal scholar here. He is the one who saw this, and he's the one who addressed it.
Go back, you'd probably take it under advisement pursuant to STARS.
Well, STARS, yes, I guess. But I think it has to be answered eventually. Which one trumps? That's the judge's question. Now, this is a two-phase argument. I actually asked in my brief that you all ignore it because it wasn't preserved. That was my first argument. However, I would hate to see this argument go out the window because it wasn't preserved. The magic words weren't used by the Commonwealth. They didn't object to the judge's ruling.
Did the Commonwealth argue that he couldn't do that?
Yes, they did make the argument. However, I guess...
I don't suspect you want us to. I don't see a rule that says that if you argue against a sentence but don't say I object, that you can't subsequently appeal that sentence as being somehow invalid.
What I would like almost for you to ignore that argument, but I think it's 5A18 of the rules that demands that unless an objection was stated with reasonable certainty at the time of the ruling, except for good cause shown or to enable the Court of Appeals to attain the ends of justice, a mere statement that the judgment or award is contrary to the law and the evidence is not sufficient to preserve the issue for appellate review. The court may find that that's true in this case. However, that being said, I would like as much as John Brown for this to be straightened out so that we don't have the question again. I'm asking you not to overturn Judge Brown's order, to leave it alone, because it is a good legal argument to the system, because 308.4 allows him to run that 1 year concurrent. It does. 308.2 doesn't allow it to be run concurrent, but which one trumps? Something's going to have to be straightened out, probably with you at first and until the legislature clears up their intent for 308.4.
Let's not forget the Supreme Court of Virginia.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You have...
I'll submit, Your Honor.
Thank you.
All right. We'll greet counsel, and the court is adjourned.